Welcome to our podcast. We have no idea how to start an episode. I'm with Lance.
I'm Lance.
And I'm JS.
Hi, JS.
Hi, Lance.
What's up?
Not much, but today I would like to talk about accessibility.
Ooh, access.
Accessibility.
That's right.
So, what's accessibility, Lance?
Oh, my. Okay, right off the bat.
Yep.
Accessibility is making things accessible. I would say with with a focus on humans, I might add. I guess it's not necessarily restricted to humans, but I guess in what most people consider just the short-term accessibility, it is allowing every individual to receive the same access or benefits from what we can interact with our world in. Is that an accurate description?
That's yeah.
Very much on the spot.
I would go with something like that. Okay, so right off the bat, today we will be talking about disabilities, and we are not necessarily the most vetted people about that. So we're sorry if we are not using the exact right word, but we'll be careful.
Yeah, we'll try our best. And if there's anything that doesn't appeal to your sensibilities, or if we're saying something wrong or whatever, it's definitely not meaningful. So please just reach out to us. We'd love to learn about this particular thing that we're not aware of, if that's the case.
All right. So disabilities. So first thing, there's a lot of different disabilities, and making something more accessible is not simply for one disabilities. So let's go on a short list. So you can have disabilities for vision. So for example, you can be blind, or you can have color blindness, which is two different things, and that we need different system to help those people.
I would say there's probably different variants in there too, right? There are multiple different types of color blindness, I know for sure.
Yeah.
And I guess legally blind, there's definitely a spectrum, right? Although I do know that legally, like, there's a threshold, but
there's a threshold.
Clearly a spectrum there.
Yeah. But even when you're legally blind, you can sometimes still see some things.
Yeah.
So yeah. You can have a hearing problem, so
yeah,
you can be deaf.
Hard of hearing, yeah.
Thinking problem, learning problems like dyslexia, movement. Like if
yeah,
you're
like
in
physical.
Yeah. Mental health, like schizophrenia, remembering, communication, like stuttering, social relationships, and well, there's many others, right? But let's keep in mind that there's not a single silver bullet for every problem.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's just going over this list makes me realize how much a lot of it has to do with like we all perceive the world in different ways through our different senses, right? And really when it comes down to it, like, it's making sure that everyone has like the same access to the same perception of things, which is interesting.
Yeah, I feel like it's about, I would say, like, equality. Personally, I don't have any specific disabilities, so I can roam the world as I want. And I feel like everyone should have the same access as I do. So that's kind of a goal of making things accessible. We'll split this in two sections. First, let's talk about the physical world. Because initially, the first research about accessibility was in the physical world, because, you know, it predates computers.
Yeah, makes sense.
All right, so there's two categories of technology to help accessibility. First, there's the assistive technology. So those are created technology to help people do things more easily. So for example, a screen reader, hearing aids, or standard traffic lights that could help like colorblind people. They don't need to know to be able to see the colors. They just need to know the order.
Yeah, that's true. And that, like, these are things that wouldn't be possible otherwise, right? In certain situations, it would make some users of this thing completely unable to do the task, right?
Yeah. And after that, there's adaptive technology. So it's when you take something that already exists and you modify it to help people with disabilities. So, previously I said traffic lights. I feel like traffic lights could also be an adaptive technology because it could already be there before, but we made sure they were standard to help colorblind people. So there's also, for example, autocomplete in a text editor. Initially, it was not made for accessibility, but people with some disabilities could really use it.
Right, it's a convenience, you'd say, right? Like,
for us, it's a convenient, but for some people, it's a must.
Right, yeah, no, absolutely. And that, like, maybe it's the wrong way of looking at it, but it's like, it's a thing, like, it's an enabler for everyone, if you know what I mean. Like, it's an across-the-board thing that lets you do certain tasks.
Yeah, so here what we can see is that those technologies most of the time will benefit everyone.
Yeah.
Because, so here, an example, the autocomplete. I can't really write on my cell phone without autocomplete, but I don't have any issues with my thumbs.
Yeah.
But it's just helpful. Or another example, curb ramps. Initially, they were made for people in wheelchairs, but right now, they're really useful for, like, people that are biking, skating, strollers. So it's good for everyone. Same thing for bus ramps. They were made for people in wheelchairs, but everyone with that, which has difficulties walking or anything, could use them.
Yeah, or going upstairs or whatnot.
Other things we can see and think about is, for example, if you have someone in your workplace that has issue reading and use Braille, before a meeting, you should be sure that there's a copy in Braille for that person.
Right.
So be mindful of that. Bathroom that are made for people in wheelchairs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all, like, easy things that we just need to think about it and take the time.
Yeah, it's being aware of the thing. And I think that's probably, like, the biggest issue is awareness, in that I have the personal belief that everyone wants to get this done and that they want to have equality, like, allow everyone to achieve the same things. It's that if you don't happen to have any one of these impairments, it's something that, like, in your individual life, don't encounter. So it's mostly just, like, being mindful of, like, any possible situation in which this task might be harder for someone else. And knowing those things, and then hopefully out of the goodness of their hearts, they will be able to, you know, accommodate, in a sense. So I really think, like, just speaking about it and making sure that everyone is aware of it is really the greatest, like, enabler.
Yeah. And most of the time we don't realize. So, for example, when I cook for myself, I don't think about food allergies. So I just make my things and it's easy. But when you go in a cafeteria, they need to be super careful. They need to, like, write what's the ingredients, what could people be allergic to. So it's really more thinking about it and things you need to do to be sure to not kill someone. In many countries, there's also laws for that, to be sure that everyone has the same access to everything.
So Canada is one of those countries.
Yes. There's laws in the United Nations that gives, like, a broad spectrum of rights to those people. But as you said, many countries has more specific laws to adapt for the more specific needs of their people.
Yeah.
So, for example, in Canada, as you said, we have the Canadian Human Rights Act, the Employment Equity Act, and the Canadian Labor Code. So those are all things that we strive to give more accessibility to people. So two of those was about employment.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. Most people with disabilities will have a harder time to get a job, to keep a job, or to have the same salaries as other people. In a study in the United States in 2012, unemployment rate from workers with disabilities was 12.9%, while it was 7.3% for workers without disabilities. So it's pretty much double.
Right.
Which is huge.
And again, I feel like in a lot of these cases, all it takes is a little bit of forethought to enable everyone, right? Like, and as you said, even for, like, the curb cuts or whatever, it's something that makes life easier and more inclusive for everyone. And so it seems like, you know, it's like a benefit across the board.
Yeah. But so here we talk mostly about, like, movement disabilities, but here there's also mental disabilities. So I feel like it might be harder for a workspace to accommodate for those people, but it's still important. They're still part of the society, and we should still think and give them help.
Right, and now the digital world. This is something that's like new-ish, right? Relatively new.
Yeah.
That it's this whole other beast that has only been created by humanity within the past 50 years or so, or at least has been in common use in the past 40 or 50 years.
Yeah.
My impression is that when we created this digital world, it may have been another case of just the people who happened to create this thing. Already, it was a monumental task to create it, and then it came as an afterthought.
For sure.
At least in the early days. I don't know if that's true. That's my impression, though.
Right. But there's so many things that at the beginning of computing that we didn't think about. Like, for example, how we use characters.
Still a problem today. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're not using English characters, well,
you're too bad. Yeah.
So if you want accents, you won't get them. So I feel like it's all the same thing. They didn't think about it because they were only thinking about their specific use case in that specific case. It's a problem, and we need to fix it. And I think we might be in the right direction.
Yeah, I think we're on our way.
Yeah. So some examples of digital help for disabilities. As I mentioned before, we have screen readers. Those are special softwares that can read what's on your screen. So they can help you to tell you, like, you're seeing this on the page. You have selected this. Or you open the menu. Now you can access those applications.
Yeah. Or even things like, there are things like on-screen keyboards, or keyboard navigation is another one, right? Or if it's restricted movement, that either one of those two could be very useful.
And the keyboard navigation is a big one. So even for people without disabilities, they might use it. Like myself, I really like to be able to use the keyboard navigation
of course,
pretty much all the time.
Right. And again, I guess that would fit into like an adaptive technology.
Right. Right. And it's good for everyone.
Right.
Because when I can, I always install like Vim.
Vim mode, yeah.
Yeah, plugins to my Chrome, Firefox.
Oh, yeah. I always try to colon W on every web page. I know there's like Vimium and stuff for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't work the way I want it to work.
Yeah, it's not too bad. Yeah. But what's colon W?
Oh, like a saving. Like, you know, the habit for a saving.
Right.
Or like Vim Q, saving. Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, that's off topic tangent.
So
screen magnifier.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one that I've seen a lot and I've used actually personally.
Why?
Sometimes I like just like focusing on little particular areas of my screen. Yeah, I don't know. I've used it before. Yeah.
Interesting. And also there's like color correction.
Right.
For people like color blindness, for example. Yeah. I switch colors, or people which are blind but can see some things.
Certain range, yeah.
Yeah. High contrast screen.
Even those blue, the blue light filters or whatever, right? That's like a use case for color correction, right? Like that's exactly what it's doing right there.
Yeah, and now it's for the mass. Like I don't know if most people, but many people are using it.
Yep.
One good example of a piece of technology that thinks about accessibility are the Apple products. If you like, or not Apple.
Yeah, we're not sponsored by Apple, by the way.
If you have money to give us, hey.
We'll talk about it.
Exactly. But honestly,
it's true that historically they've been very much focused on this, right?
Yeah, they're careful with the users. So for example, iPhone has a ton of feature for disabilities. Well, to help disabilities. So for example, there's the voiceover. So it tells you what's under your finger. So if you have your screen, you can just move your finger and it reads the screen for you.
Yeah.
So I've seen a video of someone with visual disabilities use his iPhone. It was crazy. No, it was so fast and he could use it in his pocket.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It's like the next level.
Realize. Yeah. Oh, man.
It's the next level of usage.
Yeah.
This. Describing a picture with voiceover. Yeah. So machine learning here.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
And or alt tags. That's the easier one. But
true, but it's when you go with machine learning, it's like technology that can help everyone. Yep.
It's a generic thing, right? Yeah.
Super interesting. Changing contrast again.
Yeah.
So having like super high contrast or super low contrast and with the right colors for color blindness. Zooming again. Using Siri for commands and to write text. I would say like in the last 5 years maybe, we've seen so many new like assistants like yep. Siri and Hey Google and...
Oops. Oh.
Let's shut down my phone.
We're sincerely sorry.
And what's the Amazon one?
A.
Oh yeah. Okay, yeah. A. And the Microsoft...
Cortana. Let's not say that.
This from Microsoft.
Yeah, those things. yeah, but yeah, the iPhone Siri was was symptoms of train wreck.
Honestly,
that individual was the first one iPhones, right? iPhones technology to use that, I think, was the first commonplace one.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like Voldemort.
Precisely. Yeah, and was autocorrect attributed to iPhone usage?
I would be surprised. I'm sure like Word 98.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Would have autocorrect.
I guess that's true, yeah. In that, like, the squiggly red line.
Yeah, exactly. But I feel like in the smartphone era, we are relying way more on it. Because,
yeah.
Like, let's be honest. Like, every letter I write is not the right letter.
Yeah. it's funny because like in a sense it almost feels like we've moved to this less ergonomic device. I mean, only for the like space constraints, I guess, right? It's like clearly more difficult to type on this.
Yeah.
But this autocorrect technology like offsets that in a sense.
So can we say it's harder if the technology is so much better?
Yeah, I mean, it's different. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Because I feel like the flip phones might have been better.
Yep.
It's like, if you knew where your keys were, damn, you could type fast.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas this, there's like, I mean, I guess you could get vibrate on keystroke.
But it's not the same thing,
that,
right?
No, yeah, even that, it's not it's only an indicator that you've struck a key, but
yeah,
not
exactly.
Necessarily which one.
Because currently I'm using an Apple MacBook, but like the new version, and I hate the top bar.
Oh, the top bar with the escape.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So it's like a virtual top of the keyboard.
Mm.
But since I use Vim, the escape key is virtual. So I have no idea when I
try to remap it. But
yeah, well, that's what I did. But
yeah, but I totally 100% get this.
Like, it's the dumbest thing. I don't want to look at my keyboard. I want to know if something worked.
It was funny because we were just praising Apple for its accessibility.
Oh, shit. That's
yeah. But that's one thing that... I don't know if it's been considered or... Actually, I'm not even too familiar with any, like, accessibility features of this touch bar, if that's a thing. I haven't looked into that. But in that sense, it sure seems like a regression, but might not just be knowledgeable about it.
Yeah, it's true. I feel like it's a regression for my personal use case.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's at least, like, 5% in the planet that uses that touch bar.
At least only 5, you think?
Yeah, honestly, I hate this thing. After that, the web. So that's pretty much where we work, so...
I mean, I would say so, yeah. But definitely, I feel like it's been an ongoing effort for a long time, accessibility. At least the past, I mean, in computer eras, a long time. At least the past 10, 15 years have been.
Yeah, I feel like the W3C was really...
Yeah.
Prolific on that. So I always saw like the what is it called, Aria things.
Yes.
And like the alt tags.
Yep.
That are all tags. Well, not, yeah, tags.
Tags.
Yeah,
well,
tags.
Alt fields, I guess.
Yeah.
Or...
Not sure what's the right word, but fields for accessibility.
Yeah.
And there's so many projects that encourage you to do it. So, like, for example, the Google performance tools and everything, they tell you,
yeah,
hey, your thing is not accessible.
Yeah.
I think there's a big push on the web for that.
Yeah.
So if you're a web developer and you want specific help for that, there's the A11Y project, which I personally used for tips and tricks for accessibility on the web.
A11Y being first letter of accessibility, followed by 11 arbitrary letters, And then the last letter of accessibility, which, I mean, that sort of annoys me, those. And, like, there's, like, internationalization, I-18N. I feel like it's, like, just the fact that we're shortening this word makes it harder for everyone. Like, it's the opposite of accessibility. Why?
But to be honest, I have a hard time saying internationalization. See, I can say it. So for me, I-18N is pretty good.
Yeah, I guess.
As a non-English native speaker.
Yeah, different facets, right? It's right. Like, there's a trade-off there.
See, here it's my accessibility thing.
Yeah.
I can't say the whole world word. See?
Yeah.
If we go back to the web, small tricks for you. Be careful with colors. So if you have some... If you need to present information, be careful that the colors are really distinct. So don't use like a light blue with a...
A different shade of blue.
Yeah, exactly.
By one pixel or value. Yeah,
exactly.
Value different.
So make sure colors are really different and your shade is really different.
Like high contrast, right?
Exactly. Some weeks ago, I was working on a project and I was really finding annoying that when you click on a button on the web, you always see like a circle or some annotation around it to represent that it's a focus.
Yeah.
And I find this so annoying because I don't want to know what's focus. I don't use this. So I tried to disable it, like CSS trickeries. But I realized after reading the A11Y project that I shouldn't disable it because there's many people that just navigate through the keyboard. So they just tab through the page and see where what's selected and press space to select to engage it.
Yeah.
So removing the focus visibility is really bad for them because they can't use their website.
Yeah.
Don't disable those things. One of the big thing that's good for everyone: large touch targets.
Yeah.
Because for now that we are in the mobile world, small buttons are hell.
Yeah.
Like you need to click like 10 times around it until you're able to click on it. So this is good for everyone. Just good big design.
Yeah, well, a design, it's funny you mentioned that I having like a separate mobile version of your site with fewer features might be something that's worth considering. Because if you're taking something that's supposed to be represented on a big screen with lots of real estate and trying to be putting it onto a tiny device, right? I feel like either you're going to put everything into a hamburger menu, which itself isn't great design, isn't great accessibility in a sense, like more clicks, more navigation through menus. But if you don't, then you just have, you're kind of, to fit everything onto the screen means forcefully making everything smaller or harder to navigate to.
I have mixed feelings about that. Because for example, GitHub has a web mobile version, but I can't use it. Because every time I like go in my repos and I want to comment or like merge pull requests and everything, like the mobile version is so dumbed down that I can't do anything. So I need to use the desktop version, which is hell on mobile. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not the biggest fan of removing features.
Yeah, but I think it's or maybe not removing features is the solution, but designing for this basically is probably the right answer.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, GitHub mobile. Big no-no.
Yeah, public service announcement.
Yeah, please GitHub, get good. Please never use maximum scale equal 1.
I have no idea what this is.
This prevents you from zooming. So like, there are some websites that prevents you from zooming. So when you try to like zoom to click on a button, but you can't. So this is bad for everyone. Even for me, which has good eyes, I can't zoom to click on the right thing. So for people that needs to zoom is even worse. Yeah, never prevent zooming.
It wasn't a, do you know if there's like an actual like why?
I don't know, like you're saying like that's how I want my things to be seen or that's my presentation, don't destroy it. Like,
I see. So next we want to talk about reCAPTCHA.
So what's a reCAPTCHA, Lance?
Oh, so CAPTCHAs generally, I think the original intention was to prevent bot access on the internet, in that it's a challenge to, it's like a challenge to determine whether or not you are a human. The difficulty in this is that, at least at first, And I would argue that still for now, they're particularly difficult. Let's say that they prefer to, wait, is it false negatives or false positives? They want false negatives eliminated I think the preference at the moment seems to be to lock out certain humans at the trade-off, really, that no bots whatsoever get through. Which, it is a hit to accessibility when it's hard for anyone, really, to prove yourself as a human.
Right. I know previously Google's reCAPTCHA V2 was praised to be really accessible, but they removed some feature blocking some bots that were using the accessibility features, and now it's really hard to use reCAPTCHA V2 with the keyboard. Yep. So that's really not accessible. So if you're thinking about putting it on your website, think about all the people that won't be able to do the actions on your website.
Yeah, I don't think there's a perfect solution to this yet, right? I think then the very nature of the problem means that you're like excluding some uses of your website. And you're supposed to be identifying bots, but you may not. And actually doing this is more difficult than it seems, but it does seem like there are certain features of reCAPTCHAs that are like, just looking at it, you're like, this is meant to be difficult for people, right?
Yeah.
I think V3 is on its way or something like that.
Oh, what's V3?
I don't know. I've heard mentions of reCAPTCHA V3.
Interesting.
But don't know much about it.
Maybe it will be better.
Maybe. Let's hope.
Let's hope. Yeah. All right. That's all. Yeah, We got?
All we had for today. So hopefully you learned a little something, and us in doing this makes us mindful of whatever we do on a day-to-day basis going forward, right?
So honestly, in the end, we didn't have much to say except that be mindful, think about it, and do some research in your field to see how it's applicable.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to talk about it. It's something that like really benefits everyone. And shouldn't be something that's, like, hid. Discuss it. And it's certainly not a bad thing to be mindful of this and discuss it with your peers and see how we can improve everyone's experience collectively. So.
Yeah, in the end, good design is good for everyone.
Yep. Well put. All right, thanks, Jess. That was fun.
All right, see you in 2 weeks.
Farewell.
Farewell. You can contact us and find show notes on our website, randomlytyped.com.
The intro music is by Vansky.
Thank you, Vansky.
And thank you, listener, for indulging us.